Julia Chakis is one of the readers for the Canada Writes Prize for Creative Nonfiction, and the author of two books, one of which, Epistolophilia, won the Canadian Jewish Book Award for Holocaust Literature, and was shortlisted for the Mavis Gallant Prize in Nonfiction and longlisted for the Charles Taylor Prize for Literary Nonfiction. She has also written articles, essays, and a book-length translation, and has recently accepted a teaching post from the University of Missouri. She joins us on the line today to discuss the process of deciding the Canada Writes finalists and the genre of creative nonfiction in general. I was wondering, Julia, if you could explain to our listeners why you became interested in creative nonfiction.
Well, I come out of an academic background, so I was trained as a literary scholar. I did my undergraduate at McGill, and I finished my graduate work at the University of Toronto in comparative literature. So that means I got a PhD in comparative literature in 2001. And at a certain point, I was a newly minted PhD, and I was sort of starting out on the road to some sort of career. And it became clear to me at a certain point that I didn't want to do the kind of literary criticism that I'd been trained to do, and that, in fact, what I wanted to do was insert myself earlier in the continuum of literature. I wanted to be writing the kinds of books that I thought of as real writing. I wanted to be creating original work rather than simply writing about other people's work. After I finished my PhD, I sat down and I decided that I was going to try to do something different and something in a new voice and to be bold. And that's when I wrote my first book, which was about an Algerian author who was murdered in 1993 during the Civil War in Algeria. And it was about his life and his work, and it was pretty bold in terms of form and in terms of some of the things that I tried to do in that book. Like I wrote some dialogues with the dead, I wrote some fictional journeys and that sort of thing. And then my second book, which followed on that, was called Epistolophilia, and it came out in 2012, and it was a sort of biography of a Lithuanian Holocaust rescuer, and it's based on a collection of thousands of letters and 29 diaries. So I came from the study of writing, and then slowly and painfully transformed myself into a writer of nonfiction and of creative nonfiction.
And why was creative nonfiction specifically the genre that you chose to operate in?
It's funny because I think I was a creative nonfiction writer before I realized that that's what I was. For a long time, I was writing what I thought of as sort of uncategorizable narratives, uncategorizable books, uncategorizable essays. So they weren't really academic essays, but they weren't fiction. And they sort of inhabited this weird space in between where form was really important to me, style was really important to me. I was writing scenes, I was writing dialogue, but always based in the real, always based in something true. And it wasn't until I was having a conversation with my editor at the University of Nebraska Press, who has published my first two books, when she said, well, you're a writer of creative nonfiction. And I said, really? What? What's that? And that was the first time anybody had used that term in relation to my writing. And that's when I started thinking about and exploring this genre. And eventually I went out into the community and I started attending conferences and reading and found a whole community of like-minded writers. And suddenly I didn't feel so isolated and idiosyncratic anymore, and found that I was actually doing something that had a name and that had a community. And it's just that I hadn't yet discovered it. I was doing it without realizing it.
On the Canada Writes website, the finalists all have short biographies, and several of them mentioned in those biographies that they prefer creative nonfiction because they consider it more honest than fiction or poetry. I'm curious whether you'd agree with that assessment.
I'm not sure I would use the word honest. I read a lot. I've read a lot of every kind of genre. You know, when I started writing, I always wanted to write fiction, and it took me a little while to actually reconcile myself to the fact that, at least for now, I'm not a fiction writer. I think that writers, you know, you are the writer you are, and I am a creative nonfiction writer. I don't feel that what I do is in any qualitative way better or worse than what fiction writers do. I think that it's a genre that allows me to say what I need to say and do what I need to do, and I think that poets are people who find their voice in poetry, and fiction writers are people who find their voice in fiction. These are simply different flavors of writing, and just in the way that certain people are attracted to different instruments for incomprehensible reasons. I think that my view of writing is that creative nonfiction is my instrument. It's not necessarily something that I've chosen consciously, but it's something that chose me. It's who I am, and it's what I do, and it's not a choice that I make.
Would you say that that's something that a lot of writers of creative nonfiction have to adjust to, this idea that they're not at the moment fiction writers and that perhaps we don't think of creative nonfiction as immediately as we do fiction?
I think that we often feel marginalized because fiction is more heavily valorized, certainly in Canada. The big prizes, the prizes that are celebrated, the books that are celebrated, the big winners, the big splashy awards are always for fiction. That's changing a little bit. I mean, the Charles Taylor Prize is a big one. The Hillary Weston Prize is a big one. And that's changing a little bit. It's certainly changing, I think, in the U.S. So there is a sort of feeling of being this overlooked little cousin. I wouldn't necessarily say that it's necessarily a fiction nonfiction divide, but I have a friend, for example, who's a very talented mystery writer, for better or for worse. We've had conversations where she said, I really want to write, you know, great literary fiction with a sort of capital F. But what she's good at is mystery. And so we've had these conversations where I say, you know, I think you need to be the writer you are. And I think that's part of the journey of becoming a writer, recognizing what your tools are and what your voice is and what your talents are and running with that and being okay with that. I'm sure it's the same for poets. I would bet it's the same for musicians. And you sort of, you know, you have your toolbox. You have your God-given talents, and that's what you have to work with. So I think that we may talk about it more overtly in creative nonfiction circles simply because it is this nascent genre. It has been a sort of less glamorous genre. So that conversation may be happening more among creative nonfiction writers than among fiction writers.
At least it's happening.
Yeah, and I think it's changing, honestly. I think that I do feel, I've said this recently to a room full of writers. I mean, I really feel like we're in a golden age for creative nonfiction. I feel like there's nothing but possibility, and I feel like readers are interested, and I feel like there's a hunger for the real now. It's palpable to me that I can really sense that people want to know, they want to read about what really happened. For whatever reason, because of the way that we live now, where nothing is tangible, where nothing is lasting. And so perhaps for that reason, there's this hunger for traces of things that have stood the test of time.
Speaking of the test of time, you seem to be interested in your own writing, based on the books you've published, in events that happened to other people long in the past, in contrast to some of the finalists who've submitted very personal stories. Would that be a fair assessment? And if so, why are you drawn to these more distant subjects?
One of the things that I think I'm interested in doing in my work is finding ways to bridge gaps between myself and my everyday, very small little life, and these other lives that have left traces. For whatever reason, I'm really fascinated by traces of the past. So I work with collections of letters. I work with diaries. I've even worked with archival recordings, like audio tape, interviews, and that kind of thing. Another thing that I'm really interested in, too, is not necessarily in big lives, but in small lives, and sort of thinking about the ways in which a small life functions within great historical moments, great in the sense of tumultuous and big. So, for example, the story of this really unknown librarian that I wrote in my book called Epistolophilia. So this is an unknown woman who was remembered immediately after the war, but then was pretty much forgotten. And coming across a massive collection of diaries and letters that was scattered throughout the world, and taking the time to gather that, to get to know this woman intimately, who is no longer, she's no longer with us, and trying to figure out how do you piece together that life, then reconstruct that life. And for me, that process is often dialogical, so it's often in conversation with my subject in some way, and that's where the creative and the creative nonfiction for me comes in, where I think explicitly about the bridges that I can build between her life and my life, and about what I can do for her as well as what she can do for me with her life. So it's these connections between the past and the present that interest me. It's also a sort of a process of archaeology that interests me, of sort of trying to put a life back together through the bits and pieces. And then as a writer, the biggest challenge for me has been how to fill in the gaps, whether or not to fill in the gaps. What do you do when there are holes, and how do you deal with that?
Julia, I was wondering if you could talk about the process of deciding the shortlist that you and the other readers go through and the type of criteria that you use to narrow it down to the finalists.
I was one of a number of readers. So the way that it works was every, for a period of a few weeks, there were big, fat, yellow envelopes that were being dropped at my door every few days. And so in the end, I read, I think, around 400 submissions. And I'm sure we all did. And I think some of them doubled up. I wasn't really in on how they decide how many people read. I wrote a short interview for Canada Writes about this process. And one of the things that I said for me that was really eye-opening was the sheer number of submissions that you receive is very, very sobering. You know, you sort of see how capricious the process can be. So I think to those people who entered and perhaps didn't make it to the shortlist, my word to them is it's not necessarily a reflection on your piece of writing, because really it is a sea of writing. And at some point, so the first thing as a judge is to see what grabs you, what stands out. For me, the writing of creative nonfiction and of essays in particular, and here we're looking at sort of short essays, the question is, what is the author learning? What is the journey? Where am I going with this? Is there something big and is there something small in this essay? I'm always looking for this interplay between the big and the small. So what I was talking about, like the single life against the big backdrop of history. The pieces that grabbed me were pieces that were sort of unsettling. They weren't pat. They weren't trying to teach me something. And instead, they sort of made me wonder. They made me question. They made me think, huh. So there was a piece called What Follows Beauty that really stayed with me, and it was this piece about a woman who was in love or who is in love with an addict. And we don't know much about him. The lens is very close and personal, and we don't learn much about him except for that he's left her life and he returns one night and she allows him into her bed. And it's just about that moment of regret, but also about a love that she can't fight, that sometimes in life you love people you shouldn't. And it was simply about this very real, very fundamental, and unresolvable problem. Often I'm not looking for tight resolutions. I'm looking for something that unsettles me and something that allows me to see something really big in a very subtle and quiet way.
You're going to be teaching creative nonfiction writing at the University of Missouri next year. So what are some of the key things you're going to tell your students?
Well, that's a good question. Oh. So yeah, this is a big, big step for me. I think that the main things, there are several things. So one of the things that is so important is the relationship between the personal and the universal. Much, much, much very good creative nonfiction is written in the first person. Sometimes people are suspicious. Sometimes readers and even other writers can be very suspicious of the first person because it seems solipsistic. It seems narcissistic. It seems that it's all about me. When something is really well written, it's not really about the eye. That the eye is, it's a device. It's a lens. It's a way of guiding a reader through something bigger and in a way that sort of can bring you down to a level that's very intimate and allows you to explore these connections between the personal and the universal. But it's not necessarily about the eye. The writing eye can be, and I think is necessarily somehow different from the author. So that's one thing, is that the first-person voice need not be narcissistic, and that it can be a really powerful artistic tool. The second thing, I think, and it sort of follows on this eye, is that beginning writers often want to write from personal experience. So one of the things that I'm going to be asking my students to do this fall is I'm going to be teaching a course called Raw. And the idea is to start with something raw, with raw material that is outside of yourself. So whether it be letters, diaries, photographs, and something preferably that belonged or was created by somebody else other than you. And my goal there is to work through the process of how you can start outside of yourself, but then experiment with this process that I've been talking about, finding the connections and making the dialogue between your life, between the writer's very small, very personal life, and something else that is not you. Because when you're writing and you're 20 and you're 30 or even 40, there's only so much life experience you have, and there's only so much to write about, and how many books can you write about whatever particular childhood trauma? So the question is, how do you then go out beyond the things that are simply personal, and how do you make something bigger? how do you then also incorporate research into that? How do you become a better thinker? How do you become a better reader through the writing of creative nonfiction? And it's long been said that essays and that essayists are involved in this long tradition of conversation. And I think that I think creative nonfiction has grown out of the personal essay. And so I think that that tradition of conversation and that tradition of learning and that tradition of seeking is something that's really important to foster.
And while you're teaching and making this huge step, do you have any creative nonfiction projects of your own that you're still working on?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I've got a manuscript that is pretty much done, sitting on my desk. It's similar to my second book in that it's about a single life, this time a life much closer to me. It's about my paternal grandmother, who was deported in 1941 and spent 17 years alone on a collective farm in Siberia. And after her death, I inherited a small collection of letters, and I, by accident, came across, in sort of this weird research accident, I came across a long interview that she'd given in 1975 about her experiences in Siberia. I found a transcript of it. And then years after finding that the transcript of the interview, I located the actual archival recording, which then I listened to and wrote about. So all of this stuff is the raw material for my book. And in 2010, my cousin and I took a train trip from Lithuania to find her village in Siberia. So we crossed maybe half of Siberia by train to find the place where she spent 17 years. So the book is very much in the spirit of what I've been describing. It combines the big and the small. So it talks about what does it mean to be an anonymous woman alone in Siberia, who was there because of these massive sort of waves of history that have washed over the places where she has lived. And so it's about Stalinism. It's about being a woman under Stalin. It's about the ways in which women got caught up in these massive waves of movements of people, and about exile and about memory and about the inheritance of pain and of bitterness, and about the ways in which the wound of her exile echoed through our family. She had three children who she didn't see for 25 years. So it's about that. It's about the echoes of separation, the forced separation on a family as well. So that book is sitting on my desk, and I hope it'll be done soon and we'll see the light of day before too long.
Just before we wrap up, is there anything else you'd like to add?
Well, one of the things I think that it's important to know about and to realize about the creative nonfiction community is that it's a really diverse community. So my path has been through academia and through research and archives. So I come at it from a very particular perspective. There are other writers who come out of journalism and into book writing, and their books read very differently from mine, but they're part of the same community. There are also poets, and some of the most interesting writers of creative nonfiction are actually people who write poetry as well. So they come from poetry into essay, or from poetry into sort of essayistic books, or in the right what are called lyric essays. So it's a really diverse community that has lots and lots to offer, and also within, you know, that has disputes among itself in terms of what the rules are and what the limits are of creative nonfiction. It's a really interesting time for the genre, and there are lots of very interesting and fruitful discussions going on. So I would encourage readers to look, and to look beyond Canada's borders as well. There are some really incredible American writers out there, like John DeGatta and Leah Purpura, Maggie Nelson. These are fantastic writers. I absolutely recommend that people pick up and take a look at.
How can our listeners learn more about the Canada Writes Prize?
I think the best thing to do is to go to the Canada Writes webpage, and there's lots of information there. The shortlisted stories are there. There are interviews with judges and writing tips and so on. So I think the best thing to do to follow it is to go to the CBC website and go through to the Canada Writes webpage.
I've been speaking with Julia Shakis, one of the readers for the Canada Writes Creative Nonfiction Prize, who is herself an acclaimed writer and soon to be professor of the same at the University of Missouri. Julia, thank you for speaking with CKUT today.
Well, thanks so much for calling me and for having this conversation. It's been a real pleasure.
For more information on the prize, visit www.cbc.ca/books/CanadaWrites. For more information about Julia in particular, you can find her website at juliashukis.com. That's juliashukys.com. This is CKUT, and I'm Anne Malcolm.